It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Hi guys, I'm May, and welcome to the second season of Phenomenal and Asian, a podcast aimed to redefine the Asian stereotype and share inspirational stories of those doing phenomenal things. This week's Phenomenal Asian is Kelvin Tan, an Irish chef currently working at two-star Michelin restaurant Sat Baines. Kelvin and I talk about his upbringing in Ireland, his super inspiring journey as a chef, and his most recent success on Instagram. He creates and shares the most delicious, authentic Chinese dishes that anyone can follow, and although he's a professional chef, he only started cooking Chinese food a year ago. I really hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. I mean, who doesn't love an Irish accent?
Hello?
Kelvin? Hi!
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, I'm so happy we finally connected.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Have you just come back? Where were you?
I went into town because I had to go to the Chinese supermarket to buy some black vinegar, some sweet black vinegar. Mm. So basically, I got some pig's trotters. Ooh. And I got like pig's hock, the leg part.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've had it, but it's a Cantonese dish. It's usually women have it when they, after Ooh. They give birth.
Yes, I remember. My dad was trying to force it on my sister-in-law. She was like, what?
So, I don't know. I just really want to have it. And
well, you just crave that today.
You know, I was just like, because it's been on my mind for quite some time. And I remember having it as a kid. And I rang my old man, I think, 2 days ago. And I said, Dad, I've got this trotter. What else do I need? And he's like, oh, you need to get sweet vinegar, some black vinegar, and loads of ginger. And that's it. So I went down.
Amazing.
Yeah, I went down and I didn't know which vinegar to get. So I had to ask the woman in the shop. And she was looking at me because I Googled the dish. I was like, I want to eat this. And then the woman was like, because obviously she's old, you know, she's like, that's for pregnant women. And I was like, yeah, but I want to eat it, you know?
Oh my God, that's hilarious. That's hilarious. I love how we can talk about this stuff as well. Like, you know, if you're talking to this with your white friends, they're like, what are you talking about? Why are you eating pig's trotter?
I know. Oh, so yeah, that's about it. That's the highlight of my day.
Okay, well, I'm very excited. You need to send me some pictures of is this for dinner tonight?
Yeah, I'll have it on the go. I might not eat it till tomorrow or something because maybe I'll leave it the rest overnight. And let the flavors infuse, but Ooh. We'll see how hungry I am.
I think when we messaged on Instagram, you were telling me obviously that you're Irish. Was it Chinese paddy?
Because I remember listening. I think I can't remember what the episode was, but you were on about there's no Chinese boys or something around.
And
I was
yeah.
Like, I was like, what are you on about? Here I am. Hello.
the one guy. I found you.
So, yeah,
and
I mean,
not only that, you're Irish, which is like I do have a kind of like for some reason all of my ex-boyfriends have been Irish, and my current boyfriend is Irish. So, yeah.
Weird. So you got to think for Irish things, exactly, for Irish people.
Exactly. So yeah, Chinese paddy is just throwing me all off. I don't know what to think.
Well, I think there's far and few between. So. I always say like I'm as rare as the leprechauns. Mm.
So.
you might have a better chance finding a leprechaun than another Chinese Irish person.
So where, I guess, were you born in Ireland then, or like what? Tell me, kind of, let's go back to when you were.
Yeah, so I was born in Malaysia.
Okay.
So I'm Chinese Malaysian. My grandparents on my mom's side come from Fujian province in China. Mm. And on my dad's side, my great-grandparents come from Chaoshan region in Guangdong province. But both my parents were born in Malaysia. They met, then I was born there. But I moved to Ireland when I was three.
Sorry, that's great.
Yeah. the reason being is my uncle was studying at Trinity University in Dublin. And he dropped out. He didn't finish his studies. He could speak English, ended up working in a Chinese restaurant in Dublin, up to restaurant manager position. And then after a couple of years, decided to open his own business. And at the time, my mum and my dad just got married. My dad he's a chef. He's been cooking since he was 12. And my uncle rang home and my granny said, look, your sister just got married to a really good chef. And then that's how my dad moved to Ireland. He moved over first, obviously, to learn how to cook the British Chinese food, you know, because he cooks authentic food at home. And he had to come and kind of learn the style of cooking. While then, my mum was like kind of like taking care of, so we had two restaurants, two in Malaysia, one in Singapore. And then eventually my dad just goes, look, just sell the business, just sell up and come to Ireland. And that's it. The rest is history. So that's how I came to Ireland.
Wow. Okay. And tell me, I guess, what it was like growing up in Dublin. I mean, I thought that obviously growing up in Oxford was rare enough, but I can imagine Dublin is really...
I didn't grow up in Dublin, but I...
Sorry, outside, yeah.
Yeah. So the town that I grew up in is called Navan. And it's a really small town. It's a kind of commuter town to Dublin. There wasn't many like Chinese. There was one other Chinese takeaway and restaurant called the China Garden. And there was my uncle's place, and then there was my place. So there was this three of us in town. Obviously now I think there's maybe 8, 9 or 10. I don't know, to be honest. I know my uncle is still there and the China Garden is still there. So they're like the longest ones in there. And it's quite diverse now, I guess. But when I was growing up, it was very, very white. You know, I was the only person of color at school, you know, primary school. And I guess, yeah, it was just, yeah, there's no one else really. So,
and did you notice you were different? As in, like, was there something, or you kind of didn't really realize that until you were older?
I always knew I was different, you know, because I knew I was Chinese, because at home I could hear my parents speaking Mandarin. Or they would watch Cantonese on TV, you know, so I knew it wasn't English. Obviously, I looked different from the other kids too, do you know?
Yeah.
But I guess because all my friends were like very good friends to me, they didn't make me feel different, do you know?
That's good. Okay, so you weren't bullied or...
Oh, of course, I experienced bullying from like, there were some dickheads, like there was, you know, there's some older kids who were just arseholes. But my mother would come out, like even in the housing estate, when I'd be hanging out, like kicking ball with the kids, and like obviously someone would come along and maybe start calling me Ching Chong or whatnot. But then I go home and run home crying, mom. And then my mother would come out. My mother fucking was so fierce.
I love that, with the feather duster.
And then like my mom would like obviously give the guy a bollocking, but then she gave me a bollocking too. She goes, "Why are you crying? You shouldn't be crying." So I learned how to grow a thick skin, I suppose.
What did you think about you growing up? Did you kind of not know what you wanted to do?
I guess I went to secondary school. And then it was like, it's that point that you have to apply for university. What course do you want to do? What do you want to study? So obviously I was working in the takeaway. I was working there a lot. And I kind of thought maybe I was going to take it over. So I figured like, you know, business studies would be a good option to study at university. Give me like I just figured that would be a good choice. And I spoke to my career guidance teacher and she said, well, you can study business and hotel management. There's a course down in Shannon. So it's like the southwest of Ireland that teaches hotel management, but they also like you'll graduate with a degree in commerce. So I was like, oh, that sounds good. You know, because I got hospitality experience kind of. And I did that. And then by doing that, I kind of discovered that I really like being in the kitchen. I like being a chef. I think it was more so that I missed my dad's food from being away. Because obviously I was spoiled, you know. My auntie was a very good home cook. My father was a very good chef. So whether I was at home or whether I was at the restaurant, there was always good food. Right?
I mean, I was going to say the Irish cuisine is in terms of flavor very different.
It's bland. It's bland. It's bland. Yeah. It's bland as hell. Like it's Ireland has got some amazing producer and amazing produce, but in terms of like cuisine,
spices and
it's fucking shite, to be honest. Like. Like and a lot of old, like the older generation, like they'd like their steaks well done.
Yeah,
you know, they want chicken breasts and it has to be well done. You better boil the shit of that broccoli. It better be brown before it comes.
It's probably
plate.
Just convenience for them, you know. They eat
to live.
Exactly. No,
they live. We would
eat to live to eat.
We live to eat. Yeah, I say so. But then now I'm saying that I know some Asian people who are very simple and just couldn't be fussed about food.
That's true. No, that is true. That is very true.
But the food scene in Ireland is changing. I see a lot of producers, really good restaurants popping up now, and it's kind of like piquing my interest because I've been in the UK now 10 years. I came here to learn my craft, and at the time I thought the UK would have been better, and it was, you know, in terms of like reputations of restaurants, you know, like the fine end. But I think it's changing now.
So then you, I guess, went to your career advisor and hospitality. That made sense.
And then obviously doing that at university, they were kind of training you to become future general managers of a hotel, because running a hotel is essentially running a business, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you would do like different departments of the hotel. So I got a little taste of like the restaurant service thing. I already knew about that. I knew about kitchen. But I never kind of, when I was working with my dad, I was always working in the front, like taking orders and stuff. So when I actually went to Shannon to study this, I was working in a kitchen. But I know everyone was really scared of the kitchen. Everyone's like so intimidated by knives and stuff like that. I wasn't, but it was all fascinating to me. Even though it wasn't Chinese food, it was like all European food that I was learning. Like, you know, French techniques, French, how you cut vegetables, you know, all the French terminologies and stuff like that. So it was very, very interesting to me. And I was like, you know what? I really enjoyed this. I felt really comfortable, you know, I felt really, this is cool. And then obviously going on like industry placements was part of my course. So it was like 3 years academic, 2 years practical. And going to Belgium for my second year placement, because I studied French at uni, they put me in a hotel, which allowed me to do like housekeeping, restaurant, kitchen, and stewarding, which is the wash up. And my favorite was the kitchen. I loved it so much. Like, it was my first 3 months, and it taught me French. Like, because obviously, a lot of chefs are not very. You don't have to be very like. You don't have to be educated to be a chef, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think maybe nowadays kids will maybe go and study culinary, but generally I think anyone can become a chef as long as you've got a really good work ethic and a good attitude. You will succeed, I think.
Mm.
So you can imagine like there's a lot of these people. I think a lot of immigrants as well that were in kitchens that couldn't speak English, and they were shouting at me. They were like, you know, like simple things. I was like, oh, what
so
you
how do you
say?
Communicate?
Oh, I learned French.
Oh, okay. You had to
learn
quick.
Very fast. Oh, yeah. And they took me by the hand to the fridge, and they were like telling me, showing me vegetables and showing me pieces of meat and telling me what they were in French like. So you would like, okay. You remember. So the next day when they start shouting at you again, you run, you know where to run and you know where to go.
Oh, wow. And so wait, you can speak French now?
It's been many years since I haven't practiced, but I wouldn't starve.
Kitchen French, like
I
vegetables.
Vegetables, street French, you know.
The swear words.
Yeah, like if you put me on the street in France, I think they'd think, oh, Jesus Christ, this guy's a local.
You're so right. You are probably learning about all these sorts of different cultures. You're traveling. It's a very kind of varied job.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what you want to cook as well, you know. Because when I graduated, I said, obviously through different industry placements, and it was actually on, I went to, one summer I went to the Seychelles. So our university had a partnership with the Seychelles government, and they would send some of their students over to get their degree in Ireland. And then they allowed us, they like granted us visas to go there to Seychelles to work for summer, you know, kind of because you got all these luxury villas, you know, with these like beautiful golden beaches and clear blue seas. And so we went over for summer, and I remember I was working in F&B, but F&B entailed the bar mainly.
Right.
But I saw the F&B director, And I said to him, I go, look, I'm here for a month. Is there any chance I could do like 2 weeks in the kitchen and 2 weeks in the bar? Because obviously my time's limited, you know, and I really fancy the kitchen. And he goes, oh, yeah, no problem. Sort that for you. So I did the 2 weeks in the kitchen. And I was going to do like my month in front office, guest relations, mm-hmm. something like that. And I was just like, and it was the only department of the hotel I haven't covered yet. So I really wanted to do it because in my mind, I was like, I need to experience all sectors of a hotel if I want to be a GM, right? But then in my heart, I was like, fuck front office. Go to the kitchen. You know, you love it, man. You love the kitchen. I was like, so I spoke to the chef before I left. I said, look, I meant to go to the front office for a month, but I really like the kitchen. Can I stay for a month? And he obviously knew. He could see I worked really well. I was eager. I was enthusiastic. I was very passionate about it. And he said, yeah, no problem. And he hooked me up. So I stayed an extra month in the kitchen. And then I remember like one day I went home, I was sitting on the beach, I was staying out into the sunset. Like it was just so picturesque. And I was just like, you know what? This is it. I'm going to be a chef. That was that point in my life. I was like,
how old are you?
How old am I now?
Sorry, when you had that?
That was back in 2010. What am I now? It was, Jesus Christ.
I'm 32.
So you were like 20s, in your 20s. So I was like, so when I graduated, I was 23. So maybe 21, 22, something that.
But that's amazing that you found your passion, you found your purpose so early on, because I think so many people struggle to even know what they enjoy.
Oh, well, I felt a little bit disadvantaged as well, because when I got into the industry, I was 23. So I made sure I graduated. You know, I wasn't going to just drop out. I said, you know, I'll finish, I'll get my degree, and then I'll just apply for... I was basically, what the options were to maybe go back and study it again, like do a culinary degree, but I wasn't going to do that because I already just done a degree in business. All I needed was like the practical element of it. Mm. So I spoke to my chef, lecturer, and I go, look, well, what's my best way to become a chef? And he goes, you can either go down to Ballymaloe, which is down in Cork. It's like this well-renowned, it's quite famous around the world, actually, intense cooking course. Like they teach you how to grow vegetables. They teach you how to forage. They teach you how to bake, how to cook.
Oh, I think I've heard of it. Is it quite prestigious?
Yeah, like yeah. Ballymaloe, yeah. It's the Allen family. So you got Doreen Allen and Myrtle Allen and all them. Well, it was like 10 grand or something like that for an intense course. So I was just like, I couldn't go back to my old man. I couldn't be like, yo, dad, I know you support me just like for 5 years at uni. Any chance could I get 10 grand off you to, you know, send me to the end of this course?
Especially, oh my God, I tell you to get it.
So the other option was to just go straight into the industry, find someone who would just employ me and learn on the job. And that's what I did. I did that. I just saw where everyone else was going, because obviously there's all hotels coming to our college to hook people up with like management training programs. And I just saw where everyone else was going. I was like, oh, well, Glen Eagles. Oh, maybe I'll apply for there. And then that's how I moved to the UK. I moved to Glen Eagles in Scotland.
Oh, wow.
Back in 2011.
So in terms of, I mean, what do you call it? Chefing? Is that right? No. I mean, what do you...
You're a chef. You're a chef.
A chef. Okay. Do you have to kind of stay in one place and work your way up, or you can switch around?
It depends. You know, I mean, nowadays, I think a lot of kids would go and study cooking at catering colleges and things like that. And that's a good kind of base to have, because it teaches you like classical French techniques and stuff like that. Because when you go into the industry, a lot of restaurants don't even teach you these things. Because cooking has evolved so much over the years.
But do you need to know that? Do you need to know the classical French?
You don't really need it, but I've noticed that the very strong chefs, the very skilled chefs, have a very classic foundation. Whereas like the younger chefs that don't study that, maybe just kind of bounce from one restaurant to the next restaurant, you know, they don't have a good grounding. You can see they have shortages in their skill set.
I see.
Well, it depends on you, I guess, as a person. Do you want to stay in one place, you know, where the chef will teach you a lot of different things, you know, pastry skills, bread making skills, you know, butchery of meat, filleting of fish. You know, all of these are skills, right, that you don't really learn until you stay in one place for quite some time. Because I think a lot of young people have got this idea of, well, I'll do a year here, I'll do a year there, they kind of want a glory hunter CV because it looks amazing. And it's like, but then, you know, obviously they think it looks good at the time, but when they actually want to settle down into the place, when people see you're bunny hopping from here to there, you probably won't get a job. People go, you just want a glory hunter CV.
Yeah.
You don't want to, you actually, you're not very serious about your career, you know? So any advice I could give to a young chef or anyone who wants to get into the industries, find someone who is willing to teach you. You know the food is good and they're going to teach you, and spend a good 2-3 years even there, you know? And then after that, if you want to move on and see something new, then see something new.
Tell us what you're kind of doing now. Bring us to today.
All right. So I was at Gleneagles. I spent a year there, and then I moved to London after that. I worked at the Savoy Hotel.
So
I moved there in 2012, in time for the Olympics. And I remember it was such a great time because I was like, wow, everyone's so happy in London. Everyone's smiling. The sun was amazing. Sun was out. And then when the Olympics ended, it started raining. Everybody was miserable. And I was like, oh, this is London. I fucking hate London. Because you got to imagine, right? I'm come from Ireland where everyone's so friendly and everyone will chat to anybody, right? Then I moved to Scotland where everyone's the same. Then to move to London, it was like, sorry, mate. No, we don't talk. You know, keep your mouth closed in this tube.
And your Irish accent probably just confused everyone as well. They're like, who is this weirdo?
Who is this guy? So I was a year at Savoy, and then after that I went to a place in Richmond.
Richmond, really? Richmond,
yeah. I lived in Petersham. It was like a 5-minute walk from the restaurant. The restaurant is called Dice at Petersham. Mm. I spent 3.5 years there, and that's the place where I really learned how to cook.
Wow.
Yeah. Head chef was Irish, so we kind of connected straight away.
But, and is this where you were the sous chef, or?
No, I was commis chef, just commis chef.
Okay. And that just means like, what does that mean?
On like the very bottom. Like.
Right. Okay.
So the kitchen hierarchy, I suppose you have like an apprentice, which would be like a 16-year-old. Then you have a commis chef. Then you'll have a chef de partie, which means a chef running a section. And then you have sous chef, and then head chef. So I spent 3.5 years with Ken at the Dysart. I really learned how to cook. That's where I was really introduced to gastronomy. Because hotels were all well and good. You know, I was cooking nice food, but I felt it wasn't about the food. It was more about the customer. And you were running around like headless chicken sometimes for these arsehole celebrities, which I was just like, what am I doing? Like, what? You know, this is not why I became a chef. And I became a chef because I wanted to learn how to cook just really good food. So I figured I'd get into like, you know, Michelin restaurants or something like that. And Ken at the time didn't have a Michelin star, but I already had went for like trials around the city in loads of places. I had offers for Ramsay's, for Sketch. I had Ducasse.
Oh my God, Robuchon. Amazing.
But I turned them all down to work for Ken because what I saw in Ken's, what I tasted in his food fucking blew me away. I was like, it was so under the radar. It was just so, he was just such a nice guy. And just everything about him was very, he never shouted. He was very calm. He was just a nice guy. And he just wanted to cook really nice food. Whereas in all these other kitchens, it was all machoism. Yeah. It was about how fucking hard you're going to push. It was this old school, toxic French environment. You know, this is what most majority of kitchens are like.
Mm.
And it's not what food should be about, right?
No.
So I guess I dodged a bullet with that one, and to an extent, and I went to work for Ken. And yeah, he showed me ingredients that I never knew about. You know, he showed me, we were buying stuff direct from France. We had a supplier who literally like would go to Rungis market in Paris, buy, wow, and bring it the next morning to us. So we were using premium produce, like, and because we didn't have any stars or didn't have much accolades at the time, we didn't charge that much for it, so it was an absolute bargain for what people were getting.
That's so interesting.
3.5 years with Ken, he pushed me for competitions, he encouraged me to do all the kind of these things, and then I decided to move on from there. I went to the Ritz. I decided, you know what, I'll give the hotel one more go, because I won a competition and I one of the winners was also from the Ritz, and we kind of got chatting. And I said to him, what's it like? You know, at the time, the Ritz didn't have a Michelin star, but I knew it was not going to have really good food. The pastry looked really sharp. It was classical French. It just really appealed to me, you know. And I went there. I didn't really like it, to be honest. I got a shock because it was that toxic kitchen environment that I was talking about. Because I was coming from a small team of like four chefs. Me, head chef, sous chef, and someone else. To a brigade of 60. You know, seven-day operation. It was savage.
60?
It was savage. There was room service. There was functions. There was all, everything and anything you can imagine. And it was a little bit overwhelming, to be honest. And I was just very unhappy. I was living in Richmond, which is great. You know, it was like being in London, but not being in London. And then when I went to the...
Yeah, hard hours, I guess.
Yeah, and then when I went to the Ritz, obviously I hate the tube. So I decided to move to Marylebone. Not a smart move. Like my rent was, I technically shouldn't have moved because I had no life. My rent was like,
oh my God. Were you right? I don't know anyone who lives in Marylebone. Yeah, you're rich.
And then I decided to get out of London. I was like, I had enough one day. I remember ringing my old head chef, kind of hoping like he would take me back. I was like, chef, I'm fucking broken and I don't know what to do. And he was like, why don't you just get out of London? You know, there's loads of other good chefs up and down the country. And because he's a Roux scholar, and he's like, look, I'm going to the Roux scholarship like next week, and I can meet up with all the other scholars and maybe I can ask a couple of them, do they have any positions available? So I was like, oh, sound chef, that'd be brilliant, you know? And he did that. And he recommended I should go talk to Sat Baines, Nottingham. So I emailed John, the head chef. And John was like, yeah, come up for a day, you know, come up for a trial shift. And I was like, well, you're only a four-day operation, so I'll book a holiday and I'll come up for the week, you know, so I can see what it's like, what it's really like, you know? And I did that. I took a holiday from the Ritz, went up to Knott's for 4 days. I was lucky because when I went to, again, one of these other winners from the competition I spoke about previously, he was from Nottingham, so he gave me a place to stay. He really supported me, so I really appreciate that. And I did the week, I did the trial. And then on the last day, the head chef goes, I want you to cook me and Sat a sweet and a savory dish. And I was like, all right, okay. And this is a two-star Michelin restaurant, okay? I've never, prior to this, worked in a two-star restaurant. So I was fucking shitting myself. And I was like, because Sat Baines is a very famous, I think he's well-known. I think most people within the industry would know Sat Baines. In the UK for sure, definitely. Even worldwide, I think he's got a good reputation. So in my mind, I'm like, fucking hell, I'm cooking for Sat Baines and John Freeman. What am I going to cook? Like the whole day, I'm just shitting myself, you know?
I'm sorry, that's all they say. They're like, a sweet and a sour. Like, what are they, sweet? That's all they say?
Cook a sweet and a savory dish.
One sweet dish and one savory dish. This is like MasterChef. This is like...
Kind of, yeah. Kind of like Ready, Steady, Cook or something like that. I was like, fuck my life. Do you know what I mean? I had no recipe book. None of my recipe books at me or nothing. So I was like going on an instinct of my cooking over the years because normally I write all my recipes down for all the places I've worked. But I didn't bring that with me. I didn't think to bring it with me.
Oh, God.
So I had to cook on instinct. And I cooked a vegetarian dish because it was summertime. And I remember they had an urban garden and the garden was full of vegetables, full of beautiful flowers, edible flowers and herbs. And I was like, I want to represent this as a dish because this is the season right now. This is when everything is right in its prime, you know? And I remember all the chefs were kind of coming in and out of the prep kitchen where I was based. And they were like, what are you cooking, chef? And I was like, oh, this is my savory dish. It's a vegetarian dish. It's going to have a light summary broth to it, you know? Basically highlight everything that you have in the garden and stuff like that. And then a few of them were kind of going, you're not cooking any protein. And like, there's ducks there, there's scallops there, there's pigeon, you know, and that was added pressure. And I was like, oh, bollocks, maybe I should, you know? And I was going to alter my dish. I was going to change it. And then one chef came in and he was like, mate, do you believe in it? And I go, I do, you know, I saw the garden and I want to represent that. And then he goes, then just fuck the rest of them. Just do it, you know? If you believe in it, do it. So I did it. And I did that and I did a beautiful desserts. It was a simple dessert. It was like a panna cotta infused with sweet woodruff. So it was a herb that was growing in the garden. So woodruff has kind of got an almond flavor to it. And I just had like a raspberry compote and just like a walnut granola on the top. Like nothing fancy, just tasty and good. Done really well.
Tasty, you know? Yeah.
I got the job.
Oh!
So
this is literally the best story.
And yeah, so I went back to London, had my notice in, and I moved up to Nottingham a couple of months later. And I've been here since August 2017.
No, what an incredible, honestly, such an incredible story and journey. Like, yeah. Congratulations to getting there. Like, honestly, that is so cool. This is exactly why I wanted to do my podcast, just to meet people like you who are doing incredible things.
Oh, I don't know. I'm just working. Like, it's
no,
just...
you're not. No, you've got to give yourself some credit there.
I don't. It's just a job.
Obviously, the pandemic must have, you know, screwed things up a little bit. They're still paying you, is that right? Like,
yeah. So they kept all this. My boss kept everyone on furlough. Kept the team on. Mm-hmm. And COVID fucked the world up, and a lot of people died and stuff like that. And it's been really bad. And I'm sure people have been suffering. But for me, I kind of see COVID as almost a blessing, if that makes sense, because I got to go home. I got to take a break from this industry. 10 years of just working the way I worked, I never took a break in between jobs. It was always one job to the next. And they would only take holidays when they allowed me to take holidays, kind of. And it was only a maximum of 2 weeks. And most of the time, I took those 2 weeks and I went to work somewhere else for work experience. That's how hungry I was.
Wow.
So then, yeah, going home was like being a kid again, you know? Dad was cooking for me every day. He was so happy that I was home. You know, he was up in the morning making fresh noodles, making bao, you know, and I'd wake up like a little prince at like 11 o'clock, you know what I mean? Like rolling out of bed. I could smell the food, you know? And I'd come down the stairs and there'd be like a table full of food. And I'd eat that. And then he'd already be cooking like lunch or dinner. And I'm like, geez, Dad. So I was loving it. I was like, fucking hell, this is amazing. So I wanted to record all of this food that was like basically my childhood, right? And I wanted, and that's why I started doing it on my Instagram, because I used to never post. Yeah. And I also kind of knew that when they said the coronavirus came from China, straight away I knew. I was like, fuck's sake. You know, I was like, you know, all the racist shit that I had as a kid, like towards Chinese culture, there was Chinese people, Asian, whatever. I knew this was going to come back. You know, and I was like, I guess my way of like kind of promoting Chinese culture, highlighting Chinese culture to an extent is like through food, right? And so I was like kind of taking pictures of my dad's cooking, writing the histories of the dishes, you know, like the origins, what it means to me. You know, I kind of give a little anecdote of maybe I remember this dish as a kid. And I kind of built it up like that. So I was doing that every day. It kind of gave me motivation as well. Because obviously being a chef, like I'm used to working 15 hours a day. And then suddenly you're stopped. You're doing nothing, you know. You're sat in your arse. And I was like, what am I doing? I had nothing to look forward to. And then this was it. This kind of got me going. I was like, right, every day I'll do a new post. I'll show a new dish. I'll cook something, or Dad will cook something. And that's how it started.
Wow.
And yeah, it was like March, April 2020. I had like 700 followers. Now I'm looking at, I think, over 6K.
No, that is obviously incredible. And you're so right. Like I haven't actually come across that many Asian chef Instagrams. So there was definitely, like, you were kind of one of the first few that I've seen, and it does take you back. Do you know what I mean? You're kind of suddenly like, oh my god, like all of that food looks incredible.
It's nostalgic, but for people.
Yeah,
and it really because a lot of us live busy lives and we move away from home, and you don't learn these skill sets from your parents.
You're so right. Like, I can't even cook one Chinese dish. I wish that my dad did teach me all of this stuff. But you're so right, you know, life kind of happens, and then.
Yeah. That's why I said COVID was a blessing for me, because I got to go home. And it's kind of made me appreciate the food that I grew up with. And it's made me realize, you know, this is why I became a chef, because this is what I miss. these are the flavors that I missed. I guess deep down, a part of me would one day like to have my own restaurant for sure.
Yeah.
And when, I don't know. I mean, the smart move would probably be doing it somewhere in the UK, because I think I've trained here for 10 years. So I've got a bit of a presence, or what you know. So if I opened up, people would kind of hear about it. Whereas if I went back to Ireland to do it, people wouldn't know who I am. I haven't been there for over 10 years. Do you know what I mean? So,
but do you not think there could be a gap there? Like, I mean,
oh, I'd love to go back to Ireland. I'd love to be just like,
I think that's it. We just need to, I mean, obviously I've got history with lots of Irish men, you know, we can start a movement here. We can start a campaign. We can, you know, you can essentially have the first Michelin star restaurant, Chinese restaurant in Ireland.
You see, this is the thing. Can you make that food that I cook on my Instagram fine dining?
Yeah.
Yes, you can. But would the Asian aunties and uncles come? They won't.
No.
They would tell you, "Hey, young man, get the fuck." I can cook that at home myself.
Have you been to many like Michelin star restaurants in London that are Asian? I think I've been to one. I can't remember what it was called.
So I've been to Hakkasan.
Yeah, Hakkasan,
yeah. To, Yaocha, I
think it's called.
Yeah. I'm actually going to A1 tomorrow for lunch.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I got a last minute table today. It was literally that's how he posted it. I got a table for two tomorrow. And I knew I was going back to work soon. And normally all restaurants, like when we go back to work, we close Sunday, Mondays, Tuesdays. And normally all the other Michelin star places close as well, same time.
Mm.
So I was like, look, I haven't been in A1. Since I've left London, like I have never been to A1 since he won his first star, but I've been to A1 I think 5 times prior to him winning a star.
I
saw his vision, like I went in straight away and I ate his food. I knew what his plan. I could see it, you know. I was like, I know where he wants to take Chinese food, and I guess I kept on bringing, like, I brought anytime family was in town, I would bring them. I was like, oh, check this out, this is amazing. But they didn't get it, you know. They just go, oh, I'd rather go to Chinatown, you know?
I'm so excited to see what you're going to end up doing. And I'm sure you're going to make waves in the Asian, not only Asian community, but Asian Irish.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's Phenomenal and Asian podcast. I'll be releasing new episodes every week, and if you enjoyed this episode, make sure you follow us on Instagram at phenomenal.asian for all the latest updates.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.